first one, let me know.
Oh, sure.
I'm okay, I got some water, but I need to do one later.
All right, you know what? Well, I'll have some if you're offering. And welcome to the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee. It is February 11th, 2013, and we have our first hearing on bills today. So we're going to start this afternoon with Senate Bill 196. I'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 196. We'll ask Beth to do an overview on the bill.
Senate Bill 196 authorizes the Director of the State Parks and Recreation Department to enter into contracts with private nonprofit organizations under which the organization shall solicit gifts, grants, and donations for the benefit of the department. It declares an emergency and is effective upon passage.
Okay, excellent. We have the Director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, Mr. Woods, who's going to come up and provide an introduction. And then we have some folks who would like to testify. Welcome back. We just saw you on Thursday.
Yes. Thank you. Chair Engfelder, members of the committee, my name is Tim Wood. I'm the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and I'm here this afternoon to ask your support for Senate Bill 196. The legislation will enhance our ability to connect with individual, private, and corporate donors through nonprofit organizations to improve our state park system. The legislation would permit the department to provide promotional items such as park passes, brochures, merchandise, promotional space on our website, office or meeting space for events and activities intended to raise funds for the benefit of the department. Relationships in the past have been hampered by an extremely risk-averse approach that, if clarifications are adopted, will greatly improve the effectiveness of both organizations. Senate Bill 196 will clarify expectations and responsibilities for the department when entering into an agreement with a nonprofit organization whose purpose is to assist the department in soliciting gifts, grants, and donations for the benefit of state park system. Gifts, grants, and donations raised by partner nonprofits are typically used to supplement the cost of capital and rehabilitation projects, such as the renovation of Vista House and Kamwa-Chung and Company Museum, and programs such as Let's Go Camping and Junior Ranger. The Let's Go Camping program is a recently established program to introduce families and children to camping and outdoor recreation activities in state parks. The proposed changes in Senate Bill 196, or in Section 2.1 of 196, are not intended to imply that other agencies don't have sufficient existing authority to contract with nonprofits for fundraising purposes. Rather, they're intended to clarify the department's relationships with those nonprofits whose efforts are specifically intended to benefit the state park system. I urge your support of this bill and would welcome any questions you might have.
Okay, we're going to see if we have some questions before I ask my questions. Any questions? Nobody?
I do have a question.
Okay.
Thank you, sir, for attending. This is a very important bill. It's a good bill. One question, though, and we actually have an amendment relating to it. You have said in the bill there that talking on the costs of the bill, let me see where I am here.
Can you refer to the lines that you're...
Yes, I am.
Page.
Got a pile of papers. Just had it in front of me. What did I do with it?
Well, we can come back to it.
Yeah, ask somebody else. I'll find it.
Anybody else have a question?
I got it in my paperwork or someplace.
In our house? No. I had a quick question as far as, so I think you alluded to this, but you're obviously you don't think your existing authority allows you to enter into these agreements.
Chair Dingfelder, there's some sort of confusion that exists right now, and what we're trying to do is ensure that we keep a very clear line between what the department does with government funds and the relationships we have with nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
And this helps us do that. That's really the intent of this bill.
That was what I wanted clarity on. So, Senator Olson, did you find your question?
I'm looking.
We can pull the director back up. Senator Bates?
Just ask a question. Could you give me an example of what the problem is? I mean, I'm not quite clear. You can accept stuff now. Where does it run into a dicey situation?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, the relationships as it exists now is we, as a department, aren't allowed to provide any sort of benefits to the association to help them in their efforts to raise funds. So, for example, if there were to be an event or a fundraising event or an activity at a park, we couldn't provide the space to do that sort of an activity. Things that we would normally charge the public for, we would also have to charge the organization for. So this provides sort of a contribution on our part toward the partnership that ultimately benefits the department.
So as an example, at the Bates State Park, which there is, by the way.
Yes.
I like to look it up and found it.
Where is it, Senator?
It's in eastern Oregon, outside of Baker.
Okay.
It used to be a mill, and they turned it into a beautiful park, and I'm going there this summer.
Great.
I got to see it. And nothing to do with me, unfortunately, or fortunately. So if they want to do a fundraiser out there at the park and enhance the park by local community members, as an example, you'd have a difficult time saying, yeah, you can use the park today for free, come on in, money's going to be raised, is going to help the park. You really would be feeling comfortable doing it. Is that right?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, that's correct.
That kind of stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
One of the things here, for example, I used the work on Vista House and Kamwa Chung and Company Museum. The State Parks Trust at one time had raised over $2 million for Vista House and raised over $1 million for Kamwa Chung. And all that money came to the department. But the relationship was such that we really couldn't help them in providing promotional materials, helping them make connections to potential donors through our website and those kinds of things that ultimately could have provided perhaps more funds or made their efforts a little more easy to do. There's legislation, there's statute that exists in our department right now as it relates specifically to the State Fair Foundation, and so this is patterned after that same legislation.
I do have my question now, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Bates, are you done with your question?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
We'll have a fundraiser out through the summer.
Yes, thank you. Sir, in the bill itself, you had talked about charging folks at a reduced rate. How would you determine that, and why wouldn't you charge them at an at-cost rate?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson.
Can you say which lines you're referring to?
Certainly. It would be on page 2, line 1.
Reduced charge, yeah.
Oh.
Personnel necessary services at reduced charge.
At a reduced rate rather than an at-cost rate? And the reason I ask that question is because I have an amendment that would change it to an at-cost rate. Because a reduced rate to me would indicate that there would be some kind of opportunity to, you know, charge a little bit more than what it actually cost you to do the work.
Oh, I see.
Or an amount more.
Sure. Senator Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I like your interpretation of that. I mean, I think the intent is to help, you know, the nonprofit organization in their efforts. And so if at cost would be better than reduced, that would be good. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
So then you would support my amendment?
Well, I haven't had a chance to fully read the amendments that are.
I think we'll give them a chance to look at it.
Yeah.
Did you want to mention other parts of the amendment? Because I see here you have 2 through 5 talks about a year before the department may adopt an agreement under subsection 1. And I had a question about that because a year, I don't know if they're going to know a year ahead of time. So maybe you can explain what the rationalization of that is. See that I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Well, the reason I put in a year, it's difficult, but you would have folks come into you and chat that they would be interested in doing something. And basically what we're looking for is transparency and just a full accountability of the agreements and stuff. And you know, perhaps maybe a year might be a little too long. But the transparency, because the fact that you are going to enter into agreements with nonprofits,
right,
and these agreements, you know, could look a little bit not to be insensitive, but to look a little bit fishy, if you will.
Right.
And so the transparency is what we're looking for and the accountability. So everybody knows above board that you're going to work with Alan Olson Trust to promote fishing at Waldo Lake. Yeah, or whatever the issue is. And I think, you know, maybe we could talk about the year, but I think it opens the transparency door, and which is what we want.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I fully support your concern, and that's what we want to do is be fully transparent. That's really why we're coming forward with this legislation. So if we can help to do that, I would point out that the current language requires two things. One, it requires the department to go to rulemaking to establish sort of the rules under which these agreements will be established. That'll be a public process. But it also it doesn't require us to bring the agreements for legislative review or approval, but it does require us to provide a report on the activities that were undertaken. So there's some of that already built in there. If this is something you would like to pursue, I'd like to talk about the time frame because, we need to be able to be timely and responsive and all.
Absolutely.
That. So, and I think that's your intent as well. So.
Okay. Any other comments or questions for the director? All right. Thank you very much. We have a couple of other folks that would like to testify on this, and I'll ask both of them to come up. Bennett Burns and Bruce Barnes from the Oregon State Parks Foundation. Welcome, and thank you for coming to testify today. And if you could state your name for the record, please.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Bennett Burns. I'm a past chair of the Oregon State Parks Foundation, and I've been on the board since 2009. And I am here to urge my support of this bill. I think it would really strengthen our partnership, and I'm here to answer any questions that might come up.
Thank you.
Chair Dingenfelder and the members of the committee. I'm Bruce Barnes. I'm from Pendleton. I'm the current chair of the Oregon State Parks Foundation, previously known as the Oregon State Parks Trust. If you heard that name earlier, it's the same organization, but we changed the name last year to more clearly indicate what our organization is. I have a handout here to pass on. It's a very brief statement, which basically says we fully support the bill as it's drafted. The issue of at cost, and I couldn't hear all of it from the back, but from our working closely with the director of Oregon Parks and Recreation District, if he is happy with it, we will be too. I'm confident. So,
yeah, I was going to say she can take your statement and hand it in. Also, it would be good, I'd certainly like to get your input on the proposed amendment, so
make
perhaps
sure
to make sure our committee staff will make sure you get a copy, mm-hmm. and I'd like you to take a look at that since you're both very familiar with the operations, and certainly appreciate you coming here today to share your testimony. Any questions?
Thank you for coming, and I appreciate your opinions on the amendment. And if there is some problem with the 1 year, I'm very open to discuss a parameter of transparency, a window of transparency in the amendment. If 1 year is not is too much, then maybe 6 months or 2 months. And I know we need to expedite these processes, so I'd love to talk to anybody concerning that.
Senator Olson, may I just ask for clarification? The 1 year refers to what? I didn't catch that.
I'm sorry. The 1 year, where are we? 1 year prior to formalizing any agreement between the department and a nonprofit to collect gifts and donations on the department's behalf, the department must submit a copy of the agreement to the Legislative Assembly for review. And I think my reasoning on the 1 year was the fact that we don't meet all the time, so it's difficult, We can't take this up in the interim, or can we?
Well, the way that I read it right now, it's just the department shall submit a copy of the agreement. It does not say anything about approval, so we get reports all the time during the interim.
Okay.
So it's not a problem. I mean, we get reports during the interim, and my concern about a time frame is, as having somebody who's worked for and currently works for a nonprofit, we all know how these type of arrangements go. It's hard to predict a schedule. And so I don't know if maybe you can look at that and think of some wording that in a timely fashion or
yeah.
something that affords
yeah.
more flexibility. So certainly, I think we all are interested in making sure there's accountability, although I think anything that's public record is subject to a FOIA request anyway, so certainly if somebody was interested, they could just put in a public records request and get that. But certainly, my sense is that the Parks Foundation and Parks Department doesn't have anything to hide, and certainly is happy to share those agreements, and as long as it's not a doesn't add a fiscal to the bill, that's certainly something we want to try to avoid.
Yes, Chair Dean Fielder, I really like your comment about it being in a timely matter. We basically have had a very long-term relationship with Oregon Parks and Rec Department and have a very strong partnership with them, and so we feel confident that we can move forward in a timely way with them. A lot of this work we've been it's kind of been on the books for a long time, so we're kind of chopping at the bit, ready to go. So,
great. Well, I'd appreciate it if you could take a look at this amendment, and then you can facilitate any comments through my through our committee staff, and she'll make sure to get those comments out to the committee members.
Okay, great. Thank you,
Senator Hansel.
Chair Dingfelder, I just want to personally thank Bruce for coming all the way from Pendleton to be here. He's great member of our community, and parks are important passion to him, and thank you for coming down here.
Thank you, Senator Adams.
Thank you. Thanks to both of you. Thank you. Anybody else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 196 today? Oh, I thought Amanda was coming up. She's running away. Okay, so any other questions for the department? Okay. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 196. Transition over to our water bills for the day. So I think we're going to start with Senate Bill 199, since we have a few more folks signed up. So with that, I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 199. And Beth, if you can provide us with an overview on that bill.
Chair Dingfelder and committee members, Senate Bill 199 repeals a sunset allowing the split use of water between existing water rights water right and in-stream water right during the same calendar year to continue beyond January 2nd, 2014. It establishes a process for a person to file a request and obtain Water Resources Department's approval for the lease.
Okay, and committee members, you will probably recall we had this bill, I think this is the third time this bill has been in front of this committee in my lifetime, because I was there when the original bill passed. But we did have quite a bit of discussion about this last session. My understanding is the Water Resources Department put together a work group during the interim, and what you see is the new and improved version of the bill, and I've heard there's some other amendments floating around out there, so I'm sure we'll hear about that, no pun intended, on the floating. There's a lot of bad water puns in this committee. It's just a drop in the bucket that you'll hear later in the session. So with that, I think the director of the Water Resources Department is going to come and talk about a little bit of the history, what this bill does and doesn't do, and what you accomplished during the task force meetings over the interim. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Phil Ward, Director of the Oregon Water Resources Department, and with me today is Tom Paul, our Deputy Director, to help talk a little bit about this piece of legislation. So Senate Bill 199 is about a small program in this agency known as the Split Season Leasing Program. This is a program that was established by this body in 2001 and had a sunset that was extended to January 2014 by the 2007 legislature. So what the Split Season Leasing Program does, it allows both in-stream and out-of-stream uses of water to occur during this from the same water right during the same season. So the easiest example in my frame of reference is a farmer who might be growing a field of alfalfa hay or some other kind of hay, and he irrigates it early in the season and gets one or two cuttings of hay from that field. Then later in the season, he places that water in stream, doesn't continue to irrigate his crop throughout the irrigation season, but allows that water to stay in stream, be protected in stream, for the late season fish habitat values of having increased water in that stream during that time period. So that is what the Split Season Leasing Program does. It's been a very small program. Over its lifespan in the agency, there have been 17 individual split season leases over the years with an average in-stream use of a little less than 4 cubic feet per second. The program's available statewide, but its participants are mostly irrigators from the Deschutes Basin, the Rogue Basin, and the Willamette Basins. The program requires extensive measurement and reporting. In-stream and out-of-stream use may not exceed the total amount noted on the underlying water right, so you can't enlarge a water right to do this. There are provisions in this bill, as there have been in the program throughout its life, to protect against injury to other water right holders. The lease must not result in injury to other water rights or enlargement of the existing right. And I've asked Tom to be with you today as our resident expert on these programs to talk a little bit about the specifics in terms of what the protections that the work group, the chair noted earlier, came up with and that are specifically articulated in this legislation today. So with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd turn things over to Mr. Paul.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Tom Paul, Deputy Director, Water Resources Department. The safeguards that were discussed in February before this group, as well as before the work group, were pretty much the same. And in the bill that you have in front of you today, Section 1, Subsection 2 lists a maximum term of 5 years. Today, that limitation is in administrative rule. It is not included in the statute.
But this bill would add it to
this,
the statute.
This bill would add it. In Section 4, it requires the department to provide notice, so the public would have notice when we received an application of this nature. Once that notice is issued, it gives the public 21 days in which to provide information in regard to allegations of injury if the lease were approved. Then in subsection 5, it directs that the department will approve the lease if the department finds that the lease can be affected without injury. So the department will have to go through an injury review, which we have been doing, but once again, we've done it based on administrative rule, not based on the new statutory language that will be included. Then in Section 6, because the review is quick, if we do miss our call on injury, subsection 6 of the bill gives us the ability to revoke the lease or to condition it so that the injury no longer exists.
So, Madam Chair, just in conclusion, and again, I apologize for the technical nature of many amendments to our statutes, but in conclusion, I guess I would say we have talked with some members of this committee about some potential amendments, one that would extend a sunset rather than move it completely, and another that would remove the word acquire from some of the opening lines of the bill. The department has no objection, Madam Chair, members, to amendments of these nature if we can, as we see some of them come forward that the committee might agree to, and we'd be happy to continue to work with you all to ensure that we get a bill that you're comfortable with and can move out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you leave, I'm going to take questions, but I know that Senator Whitsitt is here, so do you have time to see it?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Any questions for the department? Senator Olson, I thought you might have.
It's kind of strange because last year the administrator was on that side and didn't.
Well, it's because my foot is on this side this time, so that's why we had to.
Oh, that's right.
So I wasn't kicking her.
Mr. Ward, earlier in the day, I sent you over an email and asked you a question, and I was wondering if you'd be willing to answer it today.
Certainly, Senator.
What is the ultimate goal of House Bill 2258, House Bill 2259, and Senate Bill 199?
Well, Senator,
since we're only having a hearing on Senate Bill 199, I don't think it's fair to answer the other questions because we don't have that in front of us, but if maybe you can generalize.
So I would say, yeah. Madam Chair, Senator, generally, we don't see a direct relationship between those bills in terms of an overarching goal for the three of them.
Okay. Did by any chance, follow up, please. Did by any chance, did you have to, an opportunity to acquire the names of the persons that have leased water in the program?
We have, Madam Chair, Senator, we do have, I have those names here for you today. I can leave them with staff and have a list right here with me.
Okay. One more follow up.
Sure.
This is an important bill, and it's an interesting bill, because I guess we didn't see this in 2011. I don't remember this bill, but in 2012 we did. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So this is our third iteration of it. It apparently is quite important, and there is a connection, I feel, between House Bill, Senate Bill 199 and House Bill 2258, and the fact that we use those terms acquire. And in House Bill 2258, we use the term acquire quite prevalently. And so the importance of this bill, I feel, and it's the reason I asked the question, Senate Bill 199 seems to be a linchpin to some integrated water program. And the reason I say that is that if there's only my information that you provided me said there was only 12 leases over 12 years, and you said 17, which is fine. It's insignificant. The fact of the matter is it's not used very much. So why is this bill so important to get passed, since the other statutes that were available still allow everything to happen? What's significant? Why are these changes significant?
So, Madam Chair, Senator, the most significant piece of this legislation, in my view, is that the sunset be removed and the program be allowed to continue. So that is really the crux of the legislation. The items that Tom walked through with you just a few minutes ago are specific protections that folks who reviewed this program with us in a work group that occurred last year felt would be useful to articulate in statute, so that we made sure that the protections that are currently afforded in the program by rule and in other ways are articulated statutorily, and folks are ensured that those will go forward.
Okay, one more follow-up. As we talked about, you know, I was concerned about the word acquire, but I'm also concerned about temporary and permanent basis, because as we talked, and we talked in my office, permanent transfer is in ORS 54505 to 54585.
Yeah.
The temporary transfer is not related to any specific statute. The lease is. Mm-hmm. A lease is, but a temporary transfer of water, if you acquire, and I don't know per the amendments how that word was changed, but if you acquire a lease and it's a temporary lease, since there's not, if not, it's not related to anything in statute, what would be the length of that temporary lease?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, today the statute does not have a maximum length for a lease, and this is a lease of a water right in stream. By rule, our administrative rule does have a maximum term of 5 years. We are proposing in Senate Bill 199 to include a maximum 5-year limit. That is included in the proposed legislation.
I understand that, but that's a lease, but a temporary transfer might not be a lease. And if a temporary transfer is not a lease, then it has its own parameters.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, there are provisions statutorily for temporary transfers. They are found in Chapter 540 in the transfer statutes, and there is specifically a process to do a temporary transfer. That statute does say that temporary transfers are limited to 5 years, and that's an existing statute.
Okay. So just to follow up, so the language in here is consistent with that, as keeping with the five, comporting with Chapter 540.
Chair Dingfelder, yes. The two, temporary transfer and an in-stream lease, would become consistent in the 5-year limit.
Okay. Do you have any other questions, Senator?
No, thank you very much.
Senator Bates?
Are we allowed to ask stupid questions here?
Always.
Thanks.
There are no stupid questions.
There'll be a lot of ones
you should
here
know that
on this end of this podium. So at the end of the 5 years, and the lease ends, does the water right go back to the original owner of that water right, or does it make a permanent change in that water right?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, it can go either way. It can revert back to the original water right after the 5 years, or the holder of that water right may elect to renew the lease so it stays in place.
Follow up. With no action by the original owner of the property, does it automatically go back to them then?
Yes.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Bates, without action, it would revert automatically to the original location.
I assume that was the case. I want to be real clear on that point, because I'm trying to follow why people are opposed to this. I'm not quite getting there, so I want to hear more about that. So it's a lease for 5 years. If they don't do anything, it automatically goes back. Nobody loses their rights to the water, but they can elect to extend it if they want to.
That's correct, Senator.
May I ask one more question?
Sure, and I just wanted to mention, we're going to hear from some landowners also. We have quite a few people testified or signed up to testify, and I think we're going to hear from some landowners directly. Go ahead, Senator.
Never mind, I forgot my question.
I'm sure it'll come back.
It will.
Any questions on this end of the dais? Yes, Senator Hansel.
I just want to make sure that I heard the record. You would not be opposed to removing the acquire and extending the sunset, but I'm assuming you like if we're so inclined to extend the sunset out more than just the normal, give a little more time for the 10 years perhaps or 12 or whatever.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct. We would not be opposed to amendments of that nature, and indeed we've worked with staff to provide some possible language for you all to consider.
Any other questions? I do have a question for you, gentlemen. In the how many years have we had this program now on the books total?
Started in 2001, Madam Chair.
My first year here, so I do feel like this is deja vu. Have you had any complaints about the program since then?
We have, to my knowledge, we have not, Madam Chair. I don't believe we've ever had an assertion of injury or anything of that nature. It's been a pretty quiet program.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So that's my question.
I was reading your minds.
You were, absolutely. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Since it has been such an innocuous little program, the reason I defended the stance last time was because it was supposed to sunset in 2014, and the simple clause in the rule said that you should come and report to us, and that report wasn't made. I know it has been now. But at the time in February of last year, you hadn't made that report. And it was one of those things that I looked at that says, if you hadn't made the report and there's not a lot of use, why do we need to remove the sunset? So can you explain why that report wasn't made last year?
So, Madam Chair, Senator, I believe, and Tom, you correct me if I'm wrong here, that the report is required to the Water Resources Commission.
Okay.
And that has been made.
And it was before 14.
Okay. Prior to 2014.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I don't want to make Senator Whitsitt wait much longer. He probably has other places to be. Welcome, Senator Whitsitt.
I'm here, but it's a pain in the butt trying to get there and get it up.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Senator Doug Whitsitt, represent Senate District 28, which includes all or parts of Klamath, Lake, Crook, Deschutes, and Jackson counties. Regarding Senate Bill 199, I think it's passingly interesting that last year this bill related to the split season leasing of water. Please notice that this year the split leasing bill relates to the transfer of water rights to in-stream. What they're relating to doesn't even mention leasing this year. Split season leasing water can be a really good idea. It can be a symbiotic relationship between in-stream and out-of-stream uses. But to be truly symbiotic, it needs to be temporary. It needs to have protections in statute against enlargement and injury. And it should have a sunset clause to extend it out. I think it needs a sunset clause because, as testified earlier, over 12 years or however long it's been, 13 years now, the law has only been used about 17 times with a relatively small amount of water transferred. And I think that in order to make it easy to take it off the books, if in the future we start transferring much larger quantities of water and we find injury or enlargement, it would just make it easier to go away. And I don't think the department has any problem with that from their testimony. It needs to be temporary because the lease is not a permanent conveyance. And a 5-year lease can cause injury and enlargement, but it would go away on itself, except these leases can be renewed over and over again. And there's no, as I understand it, there's no limit to the number of times this 5-year lease can be renewed. And let's see some reasons why, you know, as the stream flows may be seasonally enhanced by other means, such as permanent transfer, which might negate the reason for a split season for the current one. So, I mean, that's why they need to be temporary. You put them in place, and they work, and then someone else transfers a whole lot of water into that stream, and really it's no longer needed. So why would we want to continue it? And then the value of the out-of-stream use may change on that water over time. You may be putting water into stream from mid-August on, and your avoidance is not growing a little bit of pasture. But what if you change the crop to strawberry plants, which is a very high-value plant and very high-value crop? Then you're going to want to have the water back on the land. And then we come to the sticker as the statutory protections against enlargement and injury that are found in ORS 540-505 and ORS 540-585. It's my understanding, on the one hand, we're talking about leasing, and on the other hand, we're talking about transfers. But, you know, five consecutive 5-year leases feels a lot like a transfer. And then as I take you back to the relating to clause, it actually says about the transfer of water, not the leasing of water. Over the last several sessions, we have had spirited discussions with the agency regarding this inclusion of the, and I don't really, after talking with Mr. Paul again this morning, I understand his reasoning, but I don't accept his reasoning, and that there, I can't see any reason why the transfer, or, you know, at least as a temporary transfer is what it is, or in reality is what it amounts to, and why they shouldn't have the same protection as a transfer. So I really believe that those issues should be included. And two, Senator Olson's comments, the term acquire in Senate Bill 199 appears to be troublesome to me. Acquire means transfer by all traditional means in addition to conveyance by assignment or by contract. As you know, the Constitution of Oregon and the United States Constitution prevent an agency or the state or the courts, for that matter, from altering or impairing an existing contract. So if we're acquiring this water by contract, once that contract is in place, I don't see how there's any possible way that it can be regulated for injury or enlargement, because it's actually a contract. And the simple inclusion of an option in that contract to renew a 5-year lease as many times as you would want to would make it permanent. So to me, Senate Bill 199 appears to be a conforming amendment to House Bill 2258. Read together, they appear to authorize an unnamed third party to acquire and administer water rights under contract. I find that really troublesome. We might note that the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement is a contract that expressly intends for a third party to acquire and administer about 30,000 acre-feet of water rights for transfer in-stream. This provision would appear to make that acquisition and transfer of water rights from irrigation use to in-stream use permanent. Further, the transfers would be made under contracts that cannot be altered or impaired by the state, regardless of any injury or enlargement that might result from those transfers. The Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust has been effectively practicing a seasonal and split-season leasing program in Fort Klamath for about a decade now. The water being transferred from irrigation use to in-stream use is often not subject to transfer because it has not yet been adjudicated. Perhaps for that reason, the KBRT has chosen to call their program forbearance. Instead of calling the transfer of use a transfer, they are forbearing the diversion and use of the water under contracts. Instead of transferring the water, which of course would not be legal, they are paying folks to forbear its use and leave it in stream. Sounds real similar, doesn't it? In my opinion, this program routinely enlarges water rights and sometimes causes injury without oversight from the department. In fact, it appears to me to be a virtual classic pact between the department and the trust to ignore the law. The department has been well aware of this practice since its inception. So today I'm offering the -1 amendments, and I would just prefer that you did not consider the -2. It's not ready for prime time. It didn't come back from LLC before we expected it. So today I'm offering the -1 amendment that corrects each of these deficiencies. It adds a 2020 sunset. It adds statutory protection against enlargement and injury under ORS 540.505 through ORS 540.585. And it removes the language relating to acquisition of a water right that would allow acquisition by contract. And we believe that this amendment would create the appropriate statute to allow the split season leasing to continue, to be regulated, to be fair, and to be a good program.
Thank you, Senator. Let's see if there's any questions for you. Any questions for the Senator? We have a copy of your amendment, so I haven't had a chance to look through it yet, but I'll take a look at it. Copy. Any questions?
Yes.
Senator Hansel?
Senator Whitsitt, I just want to make sure you're not comfortable with the protections that when the department, I think I heard their testimony, brackets 5 and 6, providing for the injury, are sufficient or all-inclusive. I'm not sure why their language is not acceptable.
Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, I am not comfortable with it in that it pretty much leaves it up to the department to determine what is injury or enlargement, whereas in 540.505 to 585, it specifically states in statute what is enlargement or is an injury. That is the primary, my primary reason, but it is my reason. I think it needs to be a statutory determination. I have confidence that the current people in the Oregon Water Resources Department will continue to watch out for injury and for enlargement as they have, but we have no, you know, this law goes on for way past who's currently in the agency. And for that reason, I think it needs to be changed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yep, Senator Olson?
Senator Whitsitt, I appreciate your time down here. Did you, is it my understanding that you submitted both the -1 and the -2?
I did, and then I read the -2 and said,
I actually never happens.
We got the staff, this was my error. We got the amendments in this morning. I asked my LA to submit them before I read them, and then I knew pretty much what was in one of them, but the other one, it just didn't do what I expected it to do.
What was the intent of the -2s, just to?
The intention of the -2 was to do pretty much the same thing in a different way, and it just didn't work out the way we wanted.
Senator, and I know we've talked about this, but in Senate Bill 199, they used the term acquire on a temporary and permanent basis. I asked a question of the director whether there was a connection between 199 and House Bill 2258, but since we're not discussing 2258 in this committee, I thought I'd ask you a question about the term acquire, since acquire is very prevalent in House Bill 2258, the ability of the department to acquire water rights. In particular, it authorizes the department to purchase water and to acquire whole or partial rights in existing surface water, groundwater, stored water, and reclaimed water. It requires department to assign, permit, or issue new certificate for acquired rights showing State of Oregon as holder. Directs department to make purchased water or acquired right resource of water supply development program. Authorizes department to use purchased water or acquired right for water banking purposes. Do you think that Senate Bill 199 has a connection to House Bill 2258? And if you do, could you expound?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I do think it has a connection. As I said, I think it's a conforming amendment. You put me on the spot. I'm not an attorney, and I'm just an old country lawyer, but I mean, just an old country vet. But you look at this, these two bills, and it certainly appears to me that they have similar language, and one certainly greases the other one, so to speak. So I'm inclined to believe they do, and I think that certainly removing the acquire language from Senate Bill 199 would be a great start.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Senator Hansel.
Senator, that was my question. If we remove the word acquired, does that alleviate that concern on your part?
If we go back to the original wording of the bill, yes. I mean, the original wording of the bill is what's in statute today, and I don't have a problem with that. The only problems that I have with moving moving forward with the statute that is in place today is we need to add the sunset, and we need to, in my mind, we need to make the protection against enlargement and injury statutory the same as it is for other transfers.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Senator Woodset. We appreciate you coming
thank
here today.
Thank you so much.
Yep. We have some folks that came from over 100 miles to come testify, so we want to make sure and call them up first. And that is Scott McCullough, am I saying that right, from the Deschutes River Conservancy. Apologize if I did not read your handwriting correctly. And Gordon Larson from Berry Creek Ranch, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Welcome, and thank you for traveling so far today to come over here. We certainly appreciate that. And if you can just make sure and state your name for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Scott McCullough. I'm the program director for the Deschutes River Conservancy, and I'm here on behalf of my board of directors to urge support for Senate Bill 199. The Deschutes River Conservancy was founded in 1996 to restore water quality and stream flows in the Deschutes Basin. The board is governed by 26 individuals that represent virtually every stakeholder group in the basin with an interest in water. That includes farmers, ranchers, timber producers, folks involved in tourism and recreation, as well as the tribes and a host of local, state, and federal agencies. This group, this diverse group, makes decisions based on consensus. They met recently to discuss the proposed bill and voted unanimously to support it. The water users on the board like split season leasing in particular because of its ability to provide producers with another revenue stream, but also maintain the water on the land during the most productive time of the year, in particular spring and early summer. The environmental interests on the board also like split season leasing. They like it for different reasons. It gives groups like the Conservancy the ability to target our investment to protect water in stream when fish and water quality need that water the most. In our area, that's typically in the midsummer and early fall when stream temperatures are at their peak. So in the DRC's view, split season leasing does what is almost impossible nowadays. It provides utility for both in-stream and out-of-stream water uses. The Conservancy is one of the prime users of the existing authorization. We've leased over 1,100 acres since 2006 in-stream using this tool. We've restored flows in the Middle Deschutes, below Bend, and a Whitechoose Creek. Both of these stream reaches are impacted by over-appropriation and suffer from poor water quality and impaired fisheries. Not only have we improved flows and water quality in these reaches, but we put money in the pocket of several producers that have been participating, and they would like to see this program continue as well. Over the past decade, stakeholders in the Deschutes Basin have worked hard to meet the needs of in-stream, municipal, and agricultural users. This has been difficult, and it's getting more difficult in the face of climate change, as well as continued population growth. Split-season leasing has been a tool that's been increasingly important in our basin. We'd like you to support it and give us another tool to help meet our future water challenges. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here. Why don't we hear from you, and then we'll see if there's any questions for either of you gentlemen. Thank you for driving over the – how was the pass?
It was snowy. Chairwoman Dinkfelder, thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Gordon Larson. I'm from John Day. My family owns a small outfit south of John Day between there and Seneca. I'm not part of the Deschutes drainage, rather the John Day. And so the pass is a little difficult. By the way, I have been to Bates State Park, wonderful place. I encourage you to visit. John Day is beautiful.
I was going to say, what part of the John Day? Because I was canoeing on there this past summer, but in the lower portion this time.
Upper is even prettier, ma'am.
Yeah.
I just want to talk a little bit today about my support for Senate Bill 199. As a small family rancher, we've owned property, ranches, and farms in this state since the mid-1800s. And I'm one of those 17 folks that have participated in a split-season lease. And I can tell you that as a producer, as a farmer, rancher, it's been a great tool to have. One of the things that often happens is, in our case, where it's so it's kind of arid, I think we get 17 inches or less annually, I'm able to take one cutting of hay off a particular piece of land, and then that land becomes non-productive for me. I can't do much with it regardless of how much water I put on it after July. I can't grow much grass. So what I have to do in order to extract any value from that land is really pretty graze it pretty intensively. I entered into an agreement, a split-season lease, short-term, and really what it's done for me is turn that into a productive piece of ground. I was able to generate some revenue from ground that I would not have normally been able to generate revenue from, and then purchase hay, and that has not only reduced the impact on the land, but there's been a side effect, and that's been to benefit the fish. And I think that if most ranchers consider ourselves the a true environmentalist, I think that we're on the ground every day seeing the fish and seeing the wildlife, and we want to benefit it. But this is a program that gives us a tool as landowners that we seldom see, and that's a kind of unique partnership with folks that normally we consider we're like oil and water. And this has been a great opportunity for me, opened my eyes in quite a few ways. I've been involved with a split-season lease for a couple of years, and I can tell you it's been a great benefit to our family and allowed us to continue to use a, to benefit from that program. So I'd encourage your support of Senate Bill 199.
Thank you, gentlemen. We'll see if there's any questions. Senator Hansel?
Scott, how many of the 17 are, of the current users are from the area that you serve?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Hansel, I believe 7 of the total number have been in the Deschutes Basin.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a couple. Scott, I noticed in here that you do have 7 on your chart. Are these leases productive enough that they can offset all the costs of production on a field?
Senator Dinkfelder, Vice Chair Olson, it depends. Each is a little bit different. And I wouldn't want to speak for the producers involved, but that's typically the sweet spot in coming up with an agreement with the landowner is to find something that's financially better than break even for their operation.
Maybe we can ask Gordon.
They exceed the production value of the ranch, if that's your question, Senator. I think exceed the production value of the ranch. When you can't only factor in the water that you're putting on there, but also the labor. We aligns. In this case, I have a teenage son, so it's particularly hard because I got to kick him around to make sure that's priceless, so to speak. But the answer is it has to exceed the break even, and it has in my case to the productivity of the land.
You've got costs to cultivate and all of that stuff, and you calculate all of that.
I do,
Mr. Larson. Can I assume from my chart that I see here in the John Day Basin that you just got into the program in 2012?
That's, I think it was 2011, Senator.
Can I assume then that the department's not giving me the correct information?
You know what? I'm trying to, I think my first, I believe my first year agreement was 2011, but I could be. I didn't bring my lease with me today, so I couldn't tell you, but I believe it was 2011.
Okay, so. Let me ask both of you just some follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Let me ask both of you gentlemen. I've had concerns with this. I think there's more to it. There might not be. But the point is the original lease, if we just, the original bill, if we just extended the sunset, would it do everything you wanted it to do? Since you've actually been leasing under that original bill.
From my perspective, without looking back to the water resources folks, from my perspective, it would. I don't think this program is for everybody, Senator. I don't believe that I think that you need to enter into these things carefully and cautiously. I do believe that landowners, ranchers, farmers are, we consider ourselves small business folks. We don't enter into these agreements lightly. We understand the value of the water. It's critical to our operation. It's critical to our families. Without water, our land is oftentimes with little value. However, I think that it's a tool that we can use and do use. So I'll stop there.
Follow up. So then the question would be, if this program that you entered into under the old law, if we just extended the sunset, it would certainly do everything you needed to do for your operation.
Without having read the entire text of the bill and the amendments, it would certainly fit my. It would work for me. I don't see a hidden agenda here. But Senator Whitsitt, I consider a wise man. He's researched this. But from my perspective, it would increase or in supporting Senate Bill 199, whether it's in perpetuity or extending the sunset, so we don't have to redo these leases every two or three years. Right. Would certainly enhance the bill.
Sure, can you answer that also?
The sunset is certainly the main issue currently for us. In our view, we've used the tool. We haven't had a single complaint either directly to the Conservancy or to our local water master. We feel like it's a good program that should be continued. And for us, removing the sunset altogether is our preference. It definitely needs to be pushed out so we can continue to use it in one way or another.
Follow up. But do you understand that the sunset is there for not only your protection but our protection too, so that we can see how the program works? And since it's worked 12 times or 17 times in 12 years, there's really not a lot of data that can be collected to say that, this is a functionally outstanding program and should go forward. But on the other side of the coin, if we extend the sunset to 2020, under the current rules, then everybody should be ecstatic because it puts another 7 years on it. We can take a look at it again. Would you agree with that?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson. As I said, I think extending the sunset would help us. But at the same time, I can only speak to our experience, and that's been an experience that's been successful and hasn't raised any issues in the Deschutes. And the two streams I mentioned, the Middle Deschutes and White Shoes Creek, these are severely over-appropriated stream systems that are watched very closely by dozens, if not hundreds, of irrigators. And when there is a problem, we typically hear about it pretty quickly. And so that's been our experience.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for coming here again. Oh, I'm sorry. You're not getting off that easy because Senator Bates has another question. I'm sorry, Senator.
First, I want to thank you both for coming. Yeah. And I'm not going to cross-examine you and try to prove a point. So cause I'm not sure what this bill says. The dash ones, twos, and threes, and twelves before we're through. But Mr. Larson, I'm an irrigator too. Probably the only one up here. I buck my own hay every spring. Trying to get out of it. Yeah. Kids don't help anymore.
Wait, I think Senator Hansel is taking
it. You do it too?
Yeah.
I know you do. Sorry?
I irrigate, but I irrigate with city water.
Oh, that'll count.
And rainwater.
Out there bucking hay when the rain's coming, you haven't done it yet. Right? Storm always comes up right when you're bucking. Never fails. What I'm interested in is, how did you hear about the program? What made you decide to go into it? And where's the money come to compensate you for not using it later in the summer? In our area, it's our biggest rains are in the spring. We don't really need our irrigation so much then. But it's vital to us in August, September. But in the spring, we often go, we don't even irrigate. We put the pipe out and never turn them off because there's enough rain already. So how'd you hear about it? And where's the funds come to pay you?
So, Senator, the way I heard about it was through a friend. John Day, that entire community is a small place. I know everybody, it seems like, and everybody knows me. I heard about it through a fish biologist, Tim Underwagner, introduced me to the program. I think we were bidding on something at the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, a competing bid. So I think that's how I heard about it, if I recall correctly. And the way that the group that he mentioned and that I ultimately entered into an agreement with was the Freshwater Trust. which is a group out of Portland, and they're, I don't want to talk about their agenda, what they were trying to do, but essentially I think what it was really trying to benefit the fish. And from my perspective, we took that that piece of ground that I mentioned earlier. It's poor soils. We get a fairly good crop of meadow hay, although I've overseeded it for alfalfa. It's about 40 some acres on that particular piece. By wheel line, and we cut our first cutting of hay, our only cutting of hay, usually on July 4th weekend. We usually try to time it with the rain. So when it rains, that's when we're cutting hay.
And now I know why it rains on the 4th. It's you. You're the one that's messing me up. Thank you. We'll talk later.
Okay. But that's who, the Freshwater Trust was the third party.
Okay. And you heard by word of mouth.
I did, and I've worked closely with the Oregon Water Resources Department in the process of entering into that lease. They've installed measuring devices and so on to make sure that there's no damage.
And the reason I asked the question, I'm curious why more people don't take part of this, and it's probably because they just don't know.
And we're going to have the Freshwater Trust come up, so they may be able to answer that.
Senator, I apologize. I thought you'd return.
You want to talk about your irrigation experience?
I can answer the question. I think it's, in all seriousness, I think it's a matter of economics, that if you can make more money on the lease than you can by the production of putting it on, that's why more people don't take it in. I know in my base, in my area, there hasn't been any leases at all because more income will be derived from using the water in increased production.
So it has to be an high enough value as far as that buying the lease out to make it worthwhile.
Obviously. Yeah, exactly. Obviously. It's totally economics, and this gentleman's economics worked out to do the lease. So.
And just to emphasize, this is voluntary. You can choose whether or not you want to re-up that lease, and obviously at this point it's working for you, but if the economics change and you might decide otherwise.
That's right, Chairwoman Digby. It is voluntary. It's just like I said earlier, it's a tool that I think landowners have. There may be I think somebody mentioned earlier, a high-value crop. There's an opportunity for me to leave this program. It was a relatively short-term lease. I look at it. I'll evaluate it again, the economics of it. I think that you need to consider that the landowners, most of these farms and ranches, even though we may be small in size by scale, most of us are frankly, million-dollar businesses, the lands and things, we don't enter into these things lightly, and I think that we have a pretty good sense for business. So at the day when the economics aren't there, then certainly I wouldn't re-enter into the lease. But it's certainly nice to have that as an option, to have another tool to go to.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate, again, your traveling far to come here today, but it's really important to hear directly from the folks who are using this tool, as you say, and we really appreciate your input. Thank you,
Chairwoman. Thank you, Peddler. Thank you, Senators.
We have a couple of folks who are in the Freshwater Trust, and then we've got some other folks who'd like to testify. So we're going to keep moving here to make sure we don't go over schedule. So Joe Whitworth and David. Or Joe. Okay.
We're going to bring David, too.
Did you guys coordinate the ties? Or
No, we didn't coordinate.
Wait, you're clashing. I think we're going to make you, move. You can't see up here, but
we draw a lot of comments on the ties because we normally don't wear them.
I was going to say,
Chair Dingfelder. Always when we come and see senators, we do that.
I can see why you normally don't wear them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys should have called each other this morning or something.
Wow. And that's a really nice tie.
So,
well, welcome, gentlemen. Sorry, we didn't mean to interrogate your wardrobe.
So no tie next time, I understand, David. Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Joe Whitworth. I'm president of the Freshwater Trust and here to talk speak in support of Senate Bill 199. With me, David Pills, our program director for stream restoration, is here with me to handle some of the more technical things as he would appoint during the stakeholder process over the year. And I will be brief. As legislation goes, Senate Bill 199 is actually pretty straightforward. It's a simple sunset removal. And as it turns out, water is at once a very emotional and can be a legally technical subject. So quickly, these types of issues can get mired in misunderstandings, mistrust, and some contention. I would like to directly say that to our knowledge, there is no connection between this and 2258. It is a standalone tool that we like to use with landowners. So This is part, over the last couple of years, we've been working in the state with the Integrated Water Resources Strategy, which seeks to find balance between in-stream and out-of-stream needs. As you know, water is a precious resource, and it is going to become more so. The state of Oregon recognized this a few years ago and endeavored to build an integrated water resources strategy. Part of actually making that strategy real is having tools that can truly balance in-stream and out-of-stream needs. The Freshwater Trust is focused on incentives for landowners, voluntary programs, willing buyer, willing seller type programs, and we do work with our landowner partners to make sure that what they do with us makes sense for them. One of the things that was noted in the last time around when we were trying to remove the sunset clause on this was that there was not in statute protections for injury analysis, and as a result of the stakeholder process, that actually is now in the statute. And for our purposes, we feel happy that those are in there, just because we do want to ensure that while these in-stream methods can be used to actually help out landowners, we want to make sure that there is no junior that is injured. That's an important piece, and for the long-term good of this program, it's just got to be there. One of the interesting things we've talked about, this is a small program, and it has been. Talking about water is not something that you do in direct and overt ways all the time. It's a pretty ticklish subject, and you have to get to know the people that you're doing business with, and they have to trust you. And before you can even get around to talking about doing an actual deal, I think of the 17, we've done several of those. We would like to do several more. We're starting to see more people realize this. You've seen the same type of low use of the in-stream water statutes that we have over time, just because it's a cultural shift, and it takes time to gain the trust and to have word of mouth in a basin to go out and, you know, get these deals going. It's not the kind of thing, we don't believe, that will lend itself readily to a nice ad campaign. It's much more a word of mouth and handshake kind of deal. And that's kind of how you have to do it in rural Oregon for where we're sitting at. So we do believe this is just another tool in the toolbox for the state of Oregon to actually carry what it has lifted with regard to water going forward. And with that, I would urge your support of Senate Bill 199 as is.
Okay. David, do you want to add anything, or are you here just to match the tie?
And if I get in trouble.
Right, yes.
Very briefly, Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, thank you all for your consideration of this. Senator Olson, I wanted to address...
Daveen, can you state your name for the record?
Yes, thank you. My name is David Pills. I'm here with the Freshwater Trust. Senator Olson, I think you ask a really good question, and one that, you know, the number 17 sort of is getting thrown around a lot, and why is this so important? It's important... You know, it's important to folks like Gordon. It's important to the 17 landowners that have done it. And I think if you look at some of our other programs that we have on the books permanently, the one I'm thinking of is the conserved water allocation piece of our legislation. That also had a very slow adoption rate initially. And now we're really seeing a huge acceleration in the use of that program. As more and more landowners hear about it and see the benefits both to their operation and to the resource. So we have sort of recently sort of dedicated ourselves to this particular tool and to doing it more because, like Joe said, like others have said, it does give us the most flexibility. And believe it or not, very few people want to actually stop irrigating altogether. And so this tool really just gives us sort of the best introduction to landowners to balance their water use like this. So we're just in the first few years of an effort to really expand the use of this program. And so I hope if we do come back with another sunset, you know, we can report on a tremendous amount of success in the future.
Okay, thank the gentleman. Questions? Senator Olson, do you have a question?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen, for testifying, and thank you for coming to my office and keeping me up to date on this. Simple question. If the, and I've asked this before, if the existing bill was just to extend the sunset, would you have supported it?
The original?
The original, the bill that came
was here in February.
Yeah, that was going to extend the sunset and make a minor change. If we have just extended the sunset 7 years, would that have been appropriate? Let's keep a sunset on there.
Chair Dingfelder, Chair Olson, it was our preference to remove the sunset then. It remains our preference to remove the sunset. And the reason is it's not a philosophical reason. It's a planning reason. What we don't want to do is as landowners are trying to make plans on, you know, in how they manage their ground or even purchase more ground to put it under production, some of them really do want to think about the dollars that they could bring to that deal in relationship with a split season lease. So for our purposes and really for the purposes of planning, the removal of sunset removes questions. And I think that you can either put a long sunset on, but you know, the power of the Senate also has the ability to review statute at any time. So you could just leave a sunset off, and then if it really started, you know, if something went sideways, you could either add a sunset back in, or you could appeal the bill itself. So there are different ways to get at what we're after there.
That was an interesting statement you made, because had we put a 2020 sunset on there, which would be 7 years of stability, even if there is no sunset, we can, as you just mentioned, we can always go back and change that bill. So really, in reality, there is no true stability to the program, because we as legislators can change it, modify it at any time, amend it at any time. The last session, 2020, was offered and was denied. The 2020 was the sunset. And I'm just curious that the importance of eliminating a sunset. I like the oversight ability. I like to see that it works. That 17 uses in 12 years doesn't seem to be a dramatic program. And the question I'll ask you as Freshwater Trust, will Water Resources Department be able to lease water or transfer water under these statutes?
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, the first two questions there, I guess. I think that, you know, like anything else, what we're looking to do is operate the tools that we have in a way that's as efficient as possible. And sunsets, to the extent that they straddle a potential deal schedule, they complicate things. And so, again, it's our preference to remove a sunset. And I think the leasing, the way the mechanics work, and David, you can jump in here. But when we go out and lease the water, we lease it and protect it in stream to the mouth. And we cannot hold water. The Freshwater Trust, we have to transfer that to the state. And so we're really working as a mechanical player in this and working to bring dollars to the deal.
Okay, any other questions? I want to make sure we get to everybody.
I have a question. He just mentioned this. You said to the mouth. Would that be the mouth of the Deschutes, or is it to the mouth of the Columbia? Does it have to go all the way to the sea?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I'll answer that. It's actually... It's a measurability question. So we work with the water master in the field to determine how far a given water right can be protected without causing injury. So oftentimes it's to the mouth of one tributary. Sometimes it can be to the mouth of one tributary. And then if it's enough water that you can measure it in the receiving stream, You can also protect it somewhere down the road in that. But that's a determination that's made on the ground by Water Resource Department staff.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will keep moving here. Richard Kosasan and Roger Beyer. Come on up, gentlemen.
Oh, this is lunch here. This is sludge.
Yeah. We won't make any tie jokes. I think we're done with the tie jokes. Okay, who would like to go first? Roger?
I don't care.
Why don't you go ahead?
Sure. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Seed Council. Senate Bill 190.
Did you say sheep?
Seed.
Oh, I thought you said sheep.
Oregon Seed Council.
I was like, it almost looks
like sheep. He's sheep. His sheep eat my grass.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't think you changed,
No, not that far yet.
Yep.
here on Senate Bill 199, I'd like to, oppose Senate Bill 199 as drafted, having seen the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 199 that are offered. I think those, if they were adopted, would satisfy my concerns if the bill or if the program is just the sunset is continued for another 6-year period. I think it's a worthwhile program and worthwhile to be continued temporarily to see, make sure there are no impacts to downstream users. That's a concern we have, is whether or not downstream or junior water right users would be impacted as this program grows, if it grows. Concerned about the ability to acquire rather than under current law where they purchase or lease. So with those objections, looking forward to seeing the next set of amendment that's coming forward. It sounds like at a later date. Be happy to answer any questions if I could.
I'll just ask a quick one. So this program has been in place 12 years, about the same amount of time I've been in this legislature, and we just heard that there's been no complaints or concerns. So do you think now if something's changed that we would start hearing complaints or concerns? Or I'm just curious.
Madam Chair, I guess the answer to that is I don't know. It's been in place 12 years, but there's only been used 17 times. I think 5 of those 17 have been in the last year, because I recall a year ago when we were here, I thought it had been used 12 times. So, and I also just heard that the Freshwater Trust is interested in ramping up the use of this program. So, and without really enough background data to know if there will be injuries, I think that's why we would like to see the sunset just extended and not removed.
Richard, welcome back.
Richard, thank you.
This is like deja vu for 12 years.
Thank you. Richard Kosa, Sandwater for Life. To follow up, I think, with some previous comments from Mr. Beyer, everybody is keenly aware the program was started in 2001, and that was, I think, with House Bill 2712, and it was re-upped in 2007 with House Bill 2097. Water for Life, in terms of the program, supports the program and would like to see the program continue, but with some modifications to the proposed bill. We believe that clarification is needed in subsection 1 of section 1, specifically with respect to new terminology dealing with the acquisition of a right. And now we make a distinction between a permanent transfer and, quote, a temporary transfer. Might bring to note the provisions found in subsection 5 of section 1. There is a distinction between what people consider a transfer under existing provisions found at 540, 505 to 540, 585. With a traditional transfer, the order is issued by the commission. Under subsection 5 of section 1, this is basically left to a determination of the department. But with that in mind, I would suggest that one option, and I think an option that would or should resonate with all parties, irrespective of what side of the fence you stand on, would be to take the provisions dealing with temporary transfers to date, and those are found at 540, 523, I believe, and mirror those. But in terms of a temporary transfer, it should be noted that in accordance with a temporary transfer, you can transfer the place of use, the point of diversion, or the point of appropriation. With a regular transfer, you are able to effectuate a transfer in the place of use, the type of use, and the point of diversion. We would also strongly encourage a 6-year sunset. It was started in 01, for 6 years. It was continued in 07 for 6 years. It hasn't been utilized, and a six-year sunset, to me, is very workable. And to address questions and issues that I think are valid in terms of no complaints, no harm, no foul as of yet, that I would encourage everybody to reflect. And I believe the last real significant shortfall was experienced in 1976, in the winter of 76 and 77. And if you look at a water shortage year and you have water dedicated in stream that would traditionally be otherwise dedicated out of stream, that's where I think you experience a very, very large potential for injury. So with that in mind, our goal is to continue the program, one, and protect other water right owners. I would make mention of the fact that provisions contained in 199 deal with the fee. And I think it would be appropriate to look forward and look at the potential conflict with other legislation, specifically that resulting from Senate Bill 788 in 2009 and the fee provisions in 2259. 2259 carries an emergency clause on it. 199 does not, so that would be probably the bill that would come into effect after the passage of 2259, assuming that that measure affirmatively advances, and that should be a consideration. So with that, again, we would like to see the program continue. We would like a sunset and clarification in terms of the language in subsection 1. With that, Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Questions, which I'm going to ask quickly because we have another bill to hear after this. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your comments. We have two more folks to come up, Steve Shropshire and Teresa Hunsinger, and I'm going to ask if you can try to wrap up your, if you have written testimony, you can summarize, please, because we can read that, and so we can get moving on to the next bill as well, which, Steve, you can just probably stay up there for the next bill.
I can stay.
Actually, I guess we have the Water Resource Department
we'll
come
let
up
them
first.
First.
Okay, welcome.
I'll let Teresa lead off here.
All right.
Okay.
You guys are wrapping up, so.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Well, good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you this afternoon. My name is Teresa Hunsinger. I'm with the Oregon Environmental Council, and I'm our program director for Clean and Plentiful Water. We're a statewide nonprofit organization that was founded more than 40 years ago, and OEC works to advance innovative, collaborative solutions to Oregon's environmental challenges today and for future generations. OEC is pleased to support SB 199, removing the sunset on Oregon's split-season in-stream water leasing program. And we do so in collaboration with other members of the conservation community, as well as with other water user groups. We submitted a joint letter that you received via email, I think, today. You've got some copies of it. And so Steve and I are both signed on to this joint letter. He's representing the Oregon Association of Nurseries. The other organizations on this joint letter include the Freshwater Trust, the Oregon Water Resources Congress, the Nature Conservancy, the Special Districts Association of Oregon, and the League of Cities. So we are some organizations that don't necessarily see eye to eye all the time, and we've been spending a lot of time talking with each other and trying to find common ground on issues relating to water conservation, water supply management, and water quality. And so we identified this program, the split season in-stream leasing program, as really low-hanging fruit. We think that it makes sense to remove the sunset on on the split season leasing program and continue the program as SB 199 does. Not because it's a large program, but we think that it's an example of the types of tools that it makes sense to have in Oregon's toolbox. These are tools that work within the state water code and the rules of prior appropriation, but provide greater flexibility so that we can make sure that we're getting water where we need it, when we need it. And last year when I was traveling around the state interviewing farmers and irrigators to identify ways to improve water efficiency and conservation in agriculture, I identified continuing this program as one of our top recommendations. So that's another reason why we are here to support SB 199 today. Thank you for the opportunity. I'd be happy to answer questions.
All right. Steve, do you want to
sure.
add anything?
Might as well. Sure. Good afternoon.
I was going to say you're being paid big bucks to be here.
You bet. Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, Committee, thank you for allowing me to be here and address you today. My name is Steve Shropshire. I'm here at the moment on behalf of the Oregon Association of Nurseries. The OAN is the state's largest agricultural sector with approximately $750 million in farm gate sales. In 2011. The economic multiplier of those dollars is very considerable and brings traded sector dollars into the state on an annual basis. The industry as a whole is very dependent on irrigation. A lot of the industry is centered in the Willamette Valley, which we all know is terribly dry in the summer months. And so irrigation is the lifeblood of the industry. The nursery industry as a whole supports, as a result, flexible water management tools that allow the industry to work well, but also tools that allow the Water Resources Department to address issues, including environmental regulation. I won't go over ground that's already been covered here, but frankly, one of the biggest concerns that we see on the horizon right now are endangered species impacts and clean water impacts on streams from which the Oregon Nursery Association draws water. And those impacts, a lot of times, are exacerbated by low flow conditions. So legal provisions that provide flexibility around getting additional flow into streams on a willing buyer, willing seller basis are actually good for other appropriators who may not wish to be engaged in those programs. In other words, more flow in the river means less likelihood of regulation for water quality and endangered species concerns. That helps producers who need to otherwise be drawing water during those precious summer months when species and farms may both need that same drop of water. So with that, I'm going to cut my comment short so that we can move on to the next bill.
Thank you. Any questions for either of these panelists? Yep.
I have two questions, two very quick ones. Steve, you mentioned that the nurserymen, they support this. Now, you do understand that if it goes to an in-stream lease, they can't draw the water out.
Senator Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, absolutely. Okay. Very familiar with that aspect. And, in fact, that is in part what helps to assure the providers or the nursery growers who are still diverting that the water will be in stream and protect them not only against endangered species calls but potentially regulation under the Clean Water Act as well.
Okay, now I see where you're coming from. Teresa, if I may, you said that you heard from folks in the Deschutes and the Klamath Basins who are putting this program to work. I understand that the Deschutes Basin has seven. If you're in the Klamath Basin, they're putting this program to work. Somebody's violating the law because it hasn't been recorded with the Water Resources Department.
Chair Dingfelder,
I would ask if maybe you were in a different basin other than the Klamath.
I believe that the Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust has been using this program.
We have a letter to that extent right here.
That they're using it?
I don't know. Maybe Water Resources Department will tell it. Maybe Senator Whitsitt, they're in trouble in his basin. But
My understanding is that in the Klamath Basin, the water hasn't been adjudicated so that they can't really do this program, this in-stream lease.
We can have the department answer that because they're coming up
next.
Yeah,
would they do that?
Yeah, okay. Certainly.
Senator
Any
Dingfelder,
other questions that they might be able to answer?
I may be able to address that very briefly. Yeah. Senator Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson. It could be that the Rangeland Trust is actually in one of the sub-basins that has already been adjudicated. There's a few of those on the periphery of the Klamath, and so my guess is there could be a chance there where those basins are already subject to the state's water laws.
Good point. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for coming here today. And actually, Steve, we'll have the department come up, and then we'll do the next we'll have you come up after that. Okay. Anybody else would like to testify on Senate Bill 199? Okay, with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 199, and we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 200. Beth, can you provide an overview of that bill? And we have just a couple of folks who'd like to testify on that, so we will hopefully be on time.
Chair Dingfelder and committee members, Senate Bill 200 allows the record landowner holding water right for domestic or agricultural purposes with subsequent completion date to apply for an assignment of all or part of a water right permit for issuance of replacement permit reflecting assignment.
Okay, I said this was water day, so here we go. The department, whoever would like to come up and introduce this bill, and maybe you could address that last question from Senator Olson about the adjudication if that guess about what parts of the basin we're leasing is correct. Okay. Who wants to go first?
Chair Dingfelder, for the record, Tom Paul, Water Resources Department. I think the question is relating to Klamath and Klamath Rangeland Trust. I'm not aware of them using the split season lease provisions at this time. They're certainly using the regular lease process. I think the Rangeland Trust is watching this and would utilize it if the bill is continued.
Okay, great. Well, go ahead, and now we'll transition over to Senate Bill 200.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman with the Water Resources Department. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony this afternoon on Senate Bill 200. This is a department bill that would authorize the Water Resources Department to split a water right permit, retaining all conditions that pertain to the original permit. So just by way of a little background, generally a water right is pertinent to the land that's described in the right as long as that water is used beneficially, and that attachment to the land is called a pertinency. If the land is sold, the water right goes with it. Over the years, as properties are divided and sold, the water right that's accompanying the land has also affected, and it's not unusual to have one property owner or one water user in that area ready to prove up, or what we call certificating, their water right, while the rest of the folks that are using that water right are not yet ready to perfect their piece. The ability to certificate, to move to that stage, is very important as it provides greater management flexibility. And by the same token, the inability to move to the certificated stage is can be an obstacle to economic development. So the department is aware of a number of such cases in which we have one party, one irrigator, unable to certificate their water right because of the inability of folks also under that water right to develop their water. So this bill would amend the water use permit process and allow permit holders to certificate their portion of the original water user permit as they become eligible. And I think it's important to note here that this bill is specific to agricultural purposes. In fact, there's an amendment, a dash 4, which I believe you have in your folders and which is also available here in the room, that specifies that more specifically, that this request pertains to a water right permit for irrigation, nursery, temperature control, stock water use, and agricultural use that has a subsequent completion date. And the reason for that very narrow language is because municipal permits already have access to a tool that's called partial perfection, whereas agricultural users do not have access to a similar type of tool, and so that's what this is intended for. During 2012 and 2013, the department worked very closely with folks in the agricultural community and also the conservation community to craft a bill that would meet the goal of irrigators, but also be very clear with its language and to prevent injury to existing water users, to prevent enlargement of the original water right, and to ensure that there are no modified permit conditions. So it's simply splitting a permit. To be clear, this language would not release any water right holders from obligations that they have today. The bill goes on to talk about some specific documentation that is needed as part of this process, a map, a copy of the property deed. Again, the dash 4 amendments specifically call out the need for an affidavit to certify that the water right has not been conveyed or withheld. That's a very important piece of this. And a statement that the water use has been exercised within the terms of its permit, and agreements showing that all of the property owners are on board with this. The department then has some very specific responsibilities to verify this information, to communicate its findings to the property owners and to the public, and to allow for comment and properly filed protest as part of our process there. The replacement water right permit may be issued if the department finds that there is no injury and there's no enlargement. And what's going to be in that replacement water right permit is very specific in terms of having the same conditions as the original water right permit and not changing a point of diversion, a point of appropriation, not resulting in enlargement in those conditions that I mentioned earlier. The department may collect as part of this bill from the applicant a processing fee that would reflect the cost of the work to get this done. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. And we, just to clarify, we don't have the dash four, well, we do have the dash four amendments, so those are the final amendments that you were relating.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. All righty. Tom, do you have anything to add?
Madam Chair, no, I think Brenda covered it very well. Thank you.
Any questions of the department?
Just one question. What would be the cost? Do you have you determined the cost?
No, we have not.
So this is a new fee?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I don't see any other questions. We have two people signed up to testify, Steve Shropshire. Oh, and yes, and Jordan Ramos, is that right?
Angela.
Oh, Angela Spada. Okay, you're with, okay. We're Jordan Rams. Okay. That's it. Anybody else that wants to testify that didn't sign up? Because I'm going to have you come up here. All right. Whoever wants to go first.
Good. I'm going to let Angela lead the way here.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. I'm Angelo Spada, an owner of A&R Spada Farms located in St. Paul, Oregon. We are a family-owned nursery and farming business with approximately 2,100 acres under cultivation. We ship our products to more than 42 states and six Canadian provinces, bringing essential out-of-state revenue into Oregon and fueling our state's economy with trade sector dollars. I appreciate the opportunity today to speak in support of Senate Bill 200, which puts an important new tool in the hands of the Oregon Water Resources Department with respect to water right permits. The nursery industry, like many agricultural operations in Oregon, is dependent on a reliable source of water to irrigate our crops. Although our business is located here in the Willamette Valley, during the dry summer months, our high-value plants would wither and die without irrigation water. Our bankers know this, and they pay attention to operational details such as water right security. One of the questions they ask us is whether we own and control the water rights we use to irrigate our crops. In order for us to use water for irrigation, we must either hold a permit or certificate from Oregon Water Resources. When we purchase land, we generally look for property that already has associated water rights, which brings me to the problem SB 200 seeks to solve. Currently, the department is not authorized to split a permit when the property it covers is owned by two or more owners. This leads to difficulties when it comes time to prove up our water use and obtain a water rights certificate from OWRD, the gold standard of water rights security. Let me give you an example. Picture a farm owned by Farmer A. It consists of two large tax lots. Farmer A applies to OWRD and receives a water right permit allowing irrigation of the entire farm. Then Farmer A decides to sell half the property to Farmer B. Currently, even though the property ownership has been split into separate legal ownerships, the law does not allow a corresponding split of the appurtenant water right permit. Why does this matter? Because it's generally better to own your own house than to share ownership, especially if the other person is not financially responsible. Water permits are no different. If Farmer B wants to move forward to prove up his use and obtain a water right certificate, the law currently allows that it can only occur when the permit holders are ready to go. Now we're back to the irresponsible co-owner. If one of your joint permit holders is not financially capable of moving forward, or worse yet, simply doesn't want to, as the responsible, financially solvent, economically productive landowner and operator, we are stuck. We have no recourse. Under existing law, the department cannot allow part of the permit to be certificated without canceling the remainder of the permit, which is a bad result for all parties. Moreover, this result would remove a water right from otherwise valuable agricultural land. So SB 200 would give the department the authority to split a permit among one or more landowners who hold title to the property covered by the permit. Once this is accomplished, those landowners can move forward at their own pace to certificate their water right. This will promote higher property values, more certainty in the water management process, and generally put a check mark in the common sense column. And thank you for letting me appear here today, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Steve, if you can wrap up pretty succinctly here, that would be great.
Again, for the record, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Steve Shropshire. I'm now appearing you in front of you as a member of the Jordan Ramos Law Firm representing A&R Spada Farms. I'm a water rights lawyer with clients throughout the state of Oregon, and this is not an issue that I've seen in one isolated place. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you in support of Senate Bill 200 as amended by the Dash Fours. It's amazing to me that on day one of hearings we're actually at Dash Fours, but here we find ourselves. The amendments are good, solid amendments, and we support those. As you've heard, we have a problem with the existing statute, and as far as it prevents folks who are ready to move forward with permit certification from doing so if that permit is shared among different properties. This bill would allow that permit to be split into multiples and then each permit to be able to move at its own pace. It is a bill that is good for agriculture. It is a bill that's good for other water users in the environment based on the various sideboards that Ms. Bateman suggested are part of the bill. And it's good for Oregon's economy because it allows folks like A&R Spada Farms to move forward, bring more lands into production, and go ahead and get those economic multiplier dollars back into the state from out-of-state sales. So in the interests of time and in deference to you all needing to get on your business, I'm going to go ahead and conclude asking that you go ahead and move Senate Bill 200 forward.
Thank you. Any questions for these gentlemen? Senator Hansel.
Chair Dingfelder, I'm more of a, it's just a process being the rookie here, freshman. Where did Senate Bill, where did Dash 4 come from? I mean, do we know how it was generated, who brought it forward?
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, the Dash 4s that you see in front of you are actually the product of fairly furious negotiations over the last 5 days or so involving the department, myself, and Water Watch to address some issues that Water Watch had brought up in concern. And I believe Chair Dingfelder's in receipt of an email from Water Watch indicating that they are neutral on this bill.
And to answer your question, they were submitted by the department.
Correct.
After talking with some of the stakeholders that raised some issues about the original bill. Don't ask me what happened to the other three amendments, but that is often the way it works around here. So I'm assuming that those other three amendments are moot at this point. Okay.
Correct.
Other questions? We're sort of wrapping up our Water Rights 101 for the day.
Thank you for your time today.
All right. Thank you very much for coming here and sharing
Madam
your
testimony. Madam Chair, I think that was more like
testimony.
Water Rights 400.
Yeah. That's
yeah,
true.
Unfortunately, we went right to the graduate course today.
Right, exactly. Well, you won't be tested until Wednesday, so that's good. With that, thank you very much, gentlemen. I will close the public hearing. Well, I should ask, anybody else would like to testify on Senate Bill 200? Okay, with that, I would close the public hearing on Senate Bill 200. Before we adjourn, I just want to make sure that I mention that we are carrying over work sessions on Senate Bill 196, Senate Bill 199, and Senate Bill 200, since those are all posted for possible work session. And obviously, there's some work to be done on some of these, some of the amendments floating around, and so we may or may not have those work sessions on Wednesday if those amendments and the paperwork are ready. With that, gentlemen, we are adjourned, and we will see you on Wednesday. Thank you.